Welcome back to another episode of The Art of Healing. I'm your host and therapist friend, Trevor Hansen. As a quick reminder, the contents of this show or anything that I produce online is not considered therapy, nor is it a substitute for therapy. My hope is that you can glean some additional insight and resources from the show in your own healing journey. Today on the podcast, we're talking about a subject that might be difficult for some of you to listen to, and that topic is suicide. The things that we specifically address on this podcast are, what is the pain that leads a person to get to that moment where they're making that decision to take their life or not? How do I deal with that pain if I have that pain happening within me? And how can I support a friend if they come to me and share with me their pain and their thoughts about ending their own life? And there's no one better to help me talk about this than Sam Eaton. And Sam, you might know him on Instagram and TikTok as Recklessly Alive, where he talks about his own story, his own suicide attempt. What were some of the thoughts? What were some of the feelings that led him there? And how he was able to step away from some of those thoughts, step away from some of those feelings, and lean into what life has to offer him. Because at the moment, he thought that life had nothing left to offer him, that it was the end of the road. And then in a moment of clarity, was able to ask himself, what else does life have for me? And what else do I have for life? What else can I give to this life? What else can I do to work on these feelings that I'm having? And Sam talks more about this and where this journey led him, but I'm going to jump right in and let Sam take it away. Sam, I'm really grateful that you're joining us today, and I'd love to start out just by allowing our listeners to hear a bit of your story.
Absolutely. The core of my story that I talk about, I attempted suicide when I was 23. I had a tough upbringing. My dad was an alcoholic. He left when I was 12. My mom, sister, and I, we all just struggled through it and some different forms of abuse and things like that. We struggled financially. And I really, I held things together through middle school really well. Like, you wouldn't have known what our home life was like at that point. I had straight A's. I was on the basketball team. When I got to high school, things really fell apart for me. I kind of quit all the things I had loved. I was pulling away from people. I couldn't concentrate or focus. I struggled academically for the first time in my life. And no one had ever talked to me about depression or suicidal thoughts. No one had ever stood up in front of me and said, you know, you might struggle with this. Here's what it feels like. Here's how you get help. No one had ever said any of those things to me. So when those things came into my life, I thought I was crazy. I thought I was the only one who had ever felt that way. I thought I was the only high school kid struggling. And it really followed me all through high school, and not every day, not all the time. It wasn't like I was actively planning anything, but it was just this constant low grade passive thoughts of, I'm worthless. I don't want to be here. I wish I could disappear, that sort of thing. So I went off to college to be a music teacher. My music teachers growing up had just been the most incredible people to me, and I wanted to be that for other people. College was even more of a struggle in a lot of ways. I mean, we put so much pressure and stress on our college students. As a music major, I was taking 18 and 19 credits, and some of those were one credit. Anyway, it was just a mess. I powered through, though, good times and bad times. But following college, my first year of teaching elementary school, I had moved back home to save money because I had student loans. I had been through a breakup recently. I was back living at home where all this trauma was coming up again.
Yeah.
And things just completely bottomed out. I made a plan. I picked a day. Luckily, when that day came, I chose to stay. I had really wrestled with it and really, I kind of had given myself an ultimatum. I was like, either you're going to do this or never think about it again. After wrestling with that for most of the day, I had this feeling, and I don't really know how to describe it. It wasn't a voice, like an audible voice. It was just this feeling of, have you really given life everything you've got? That was like this underlying question in my brain of, have you really tried everything to fight back against what you don't like about yourself, what you don't like about your life? And ultimately the feeling was I hadn't tried everything. I hadn't really given it everything, the healing part. And it's been a long battle since, I wish my story was And then I was instantly better and I never struggled again. I'm 33 now. So, I mean, it's almost 10 years ago. I guess it'll be 10 years this year. And so I certainly have good days and bad days. But ultimately, I want to use that pain that I experienced to help others.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a beautiful story. And hearing, you know, that realization that says, have I really given this all that I could? And I think sometimes the question is like, what else can I give? Sometimes people aren't aware of like the resources that are even out there for them to understand their own trauma. It's coming up for you. And part of that, you don't even understand. You're like, why do I feel the way I feel? I don't know. Was that part of your experience? Just some of that confusion around your feelings themselves?
Oh, absolutely. And like, you know, for most of us, we feel trauma in our body. You know, you're like, you can relive some of that trauma when you're back in that place. And absolutely, like I said before, nobody had talked to me about that. I had never known anyone who talked about therapy or even where to start if you were feeling that way. And so it is joy for me. It's hard to be so transparent about my journey, but the best feeling in the world is just knowing that someone has it a little bit easier than I had it. And we can connect them to ways that can help and help them get through it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Tell me a little bit more. And I want to revisit, you know, some of those ways to get through it, but I want to visit the topic of like the pain behind what was happening, because in order to go from, hey, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling depressed, you know, maybe there's some purposelessness in life, to feeling like, hey, this is the end of life. I need to be done here. There's a significant amount of pain there. And I think one of the statements that I really have a problems with is when people say things like, oh, suicide is like to get attention or something like that. And I'm like, whoa, 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 hold on. Let's talk about the actual pain. What was that experience like for you? Tell me about a little bit more about what drove you there.
I mean, along with what you're saying, one of the things I always hear is suicide is so selfish. It's the most selfish thing you could ever do. Mm-hmm. And I understand where that viewpoint is coming from, but you could understand the amount of pain I felt for 5 minutes on that day when I was making that choice. I 100% believe you wouldn't say it was selfish. You would say, I get it. I mean, if you can imagine a pain so deep that you don't care what happens to your friends and family and the people who love you, that is the amount of just torture that it felt like to be in my body and to be in my brain. And people don't, unless you've experienced it, really is one of those things that you don't understand. And part of suicidal thoughts too is you're not seeing the world the way that it really is. I mean, that's at least how my depression and my mental health journey. You are not experiencing the world in reality. I mean, one of the analogies, the best analogies I come up with is kind of like anorexia, you know, an eating disorder where someone is wasting away, they're not eating, yet when they look in the mirror, they see themselves as fat and they say, I am fat, I need to stop eating. That's how depression was for me. It's you're not seeing the people who love you, you're not feeling hope, you're not feeling joy, everything's numb, and you just, anything you can do to get that pain to stop is what you're thinking. And at some point, and that's what suicide is, right? It's when your pain is higher than your ability to cope. And luckily now I have so many more tools. I have so many more places I can go to when I have those high pain levels. Now I have ways to bring that down and places to go. And that's what we want to teach people and help people see before they get to where I was.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love how you said, you know, it's a pain that's really hard to understand unless you've gone through it. And it's a pain that's so big that drives you to really abandon the most important things in life and life itself, which is a really big thing. And I think when someone's going through that pain, or they are talking about suicidal ideations or thoughts, and or maybe they have an attempt, I don't feel like it's anyone else's place to say like, oh, suicide is selfish, or you're doing this for attention. Because on the off chance that sometime somebody does it for attention, which I think it does happen, but it's very rare, that'll probably show up but at the same time, that's drawn from a place of pain. That's from a place that says, I need connection. I need someone to be there for me. I need to be loved. And if this is how I do that, then then that's the proposed solution, right? But it's not our place to judge what the motivation is, but to take the seriousness of it and say, okay, hold on, let me put on the brakes and just like be here with you now and try to understand that pain. Was there anybody in your life that was able to kind of do that for you, be able to kind of put on the brakes and hold your pain a little bit?
It has taken a long time. So I actually didn't tell anyone in my real life about my attempt for 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
And it was a really hard experience to tell people who loved me and were seeing me every single day that I was going through that. It was really hard for them to understand.
How would they react?
You know, that was the part of this journey that I didn't really expect. So about 4 or 5 years after my attempt, I'm a school teacher. I teach in a pretty large district outside Minneapolis. And in a short amount of time, we lost 3 students, a teacher, and a principal who all took their own life. It was absolutely devastating to our community. I struggled because I knew what that felt like. And I struggled to understand what as a community we were missing and just that we needed to do something more. Clearly, we had a massive set of tragedies on our hand that we weren't dealing with. So that's why I started doing what I did. And it was baby steps. I started writing my story. I started speaking just at small youth groups and at-risk teen centers. And over time, it became a much bigger thing. But when I started that journey, a lot of people in my life had a really negative reaction to sharing that. And in some ways I would go to coffee and I would have to console them about what I went through and no judgment. I mean, it's everybody's going to deal with that. It's different.
Right,
and
right.
It's a topic that a lot of people, they don't know what to say or what to do.
No, it's hard to know,
but it was hard to watch people in my life get hurt when I started being more open about this.
Yeah. That's really hard. Cause like, hey, this source of my pain, like this thing that drove me to make a decision that's the most final and devastating decision I probably could have ever made is now the source of somebody else's pain in a sense. Like you're comforting them about your suicide attempt.
Absolutely.
That's really hard. And what do you think it is about suicide and the topic that is so uncomfortable for people? I mean, I have my own answers, but I'd love to hear from what you've experienced being one to have shared your own personal story. What do you think it is that's so uncomfy about that?
I mean, first of all, I am shocked constantly at the number of people who share that they have experienced it at some point in their life, feeling suicidal, not wanting to be alive. It is crazy to me. And people in my life, people who I've known for a long time, once I started sharing very publicly, the number of people who have messaged me or just pulled me aside and said, thank you for being a voice to this, is more than I ever could have imagined.
100%.
The biggest stigma is that people are afraid to talk about it because they think they're going to make it worse. And all of the research has shown that talking about suicide doesn't make it any more likely that someone will attempt. In fact, it makes it much more likely that they'll seek help. And I think that is the biggest thing that we need to take away is, unfortunately, in America, at least, we kind of fell into this culture where you don't talk about serious things. You don't talk about politics. You don't talk about religion, right? There's this code of we don't talk about real things, but what that created was not being able to share your struggles. So you shove them all down and you shove them all down. So unfortunately I think we're making some really good headway of just being able to be vulnerable. It takes a lot of vulnerability to A, share what you're going through, and B, just listen and be there for someone who is there or is going through this. I mean, the biggest gift you can give someone who's feeling suicidal is to just listen, not to fix, not to do anything, but just sit there and acknowledge their pain. I mean, you don't have to do anything other than just listen and say, wow, that's really hard. I'm so sorry you're going through that. I'm here for you no matter what. That's where suicide prevention really happens, is in those moments.
No, that's 100% true. I can't agree more. That's pretty true across like most emotional pain is we find a lot of relief in our connections. I see that in therapy all the time. I do couples therapy, and oftentimes these people on each side of the relationship have some sort of like deep-seated pain. Usually it has to do with like loneliness or fear that I'm going to lose you, or I'm not good enough. These are really common themes. And at the heart of it, if I can help these people within this couple session to voice their pain and coach the other one on the other side to, like you said, not fix it, not jump in, but simply, you know, say things like, I hear you, you know, keep telling me what you're telling me. I'm there for you, kind of reassuring the connection. And then also empathizing with the pain, like you said, hey, I've never felt that way. And if you haven't felt that way, that's okay. It's like, you don't have to have, you're like, I can't even imagine what it would be like to be you. That must be really hard. Keep telling me more. I think that those kind of words are healing. I mean, they feel healing even just to say them right now.
Absolutely.
For and I, sure think, I think the hard part too is that we avoid talking about suicide because we feel like we need to fix it. And suicide is like this big, huge problem that we have no idea how to handle. And to say like your friend is going to know how to handle or your suicidal thoughts, or that you're going to know how to handle theirs, it's like, or fix them, I should say. I don't think that's realistic. I think leaning into the fact that says, I don't know how to fix this. And that is totally okay.
I think, at least in my experience, a lot of people struggle to have real relationships that are built on that. It is very uncomfortable to walk through maybe the lowest season of someone's life. And so a lot of us move away from that discomfort. You know, we put on good vibes only is what we put on our social media. So if someone does not have good vibes, and I've lived through that a number of times, I have to make choices on a daily basis on who gets to know how I'm actually doing. You know, I have to set those boundaries for myself because some people can't handle it, and that's okay. That's their journey. That's where they're at. But we all need a handful of, we need a team of people who can handle it. A team that might include a therapist, family, if that's an option, friends. It might be a support group. It could be online, could be in person, could be social media. There's so many options these days to build that team and build that support crew. Yeah. It's scary at the start, and it's kind of hit or miss to find those people because you're going to think you found that person and you know, maybe they can't and they're going to ghost you or whatever. You know, maybe you found a good therapist and they move across the country. It's really hard to build that team, but that is the most important thing. If you yourself are struggling with mental health or suicidal thoughts, is you've got to push yourself to start. It might just be one person. It might just be going into a therapist store, and that's where it starts. But finding one person who's going to help you carry that load.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Finding that point of connection, someone to kind of just hold that pain, share it with you a little bit and normalize it, makes it manageable. I made an analogy on one of my Instagram videos a while back of these kind of pains are kind of like holding a beach ball underneath the water. And if you hold it down there long enough, your hands eventually are going to slip and that's going to shoot to the surface and create a big splash. And those, you know, that big splash moment where it shoots to the surface could look like, you know, a suicide attempt. It could look like it lashing out at people that you love or whatever else. But if we allow that thought of, you know, of suicide or of my depression or whatever's going on, if we allow it to kind of float on the surface, it makes it a whole lot more manageable, especially if we have somebody there to help us with that process and allow it just to float there. And I think people think that they have to like banish their suicidal thoughts to like this dark place in the universe that can never be seen again. What would you say to a person that shows up and it's just like, I don't ever want to think about suicide again. Like it comes up and I hate it and I just want to push it away. What, I guess, did you have some of those experiences? I'm guessing that you had.
Absolutely. I mean, it is something I still battle, and you know, that's even harder at some seasons to be an advocate for this and then still struggle myself. The biggest thing that I work on is just reframing that thought and finding a phrase that works for you to replace that thought with. So for one of mine is, I'm feeling overwhelmed and I don't know what to do. So there's some research that if you sit with a thought for more than 17 seconds, it's going to keep repeating in your brain. So to interrupt that thought immediately, and that is where a lot of my suicidal thoughts come from, or I'm feeling very lonely, I need to do something to reach out, you know, just having a few of those frames to identify, okay, what is that feeling? The feeling for me today is not that I actually don't want to be alive. The feeling is a different emotion. And once I can name that and I have some tools to move through that, then I don't sit in those suicidal thought places anymore. You know, yeah. It's much more unlikely that it's going to take me down for a half a day or a full day or something like that. So, I agree. I had a therapist say to me, well, I think this is just something you're going to struggle with the rest of your life. And now we just have to manage it. And that was horrible to hear. Please don't ever say that to anyone. Any therapists are listening. Please don't tell someone that they're going to feel like they don't want to be alive for the next 50 years. Yeah,
that's a terrible future.
Whether that's true or not, I think instead for me in my journey, it's been a lot healthier to just focus today, focus on managing today, and not have this perfect goal that it's never going to happen again.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love that thought. And I like how you kind of break it down. You know, sometimes we get trapped in that thought of like, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to be here anymore. I'm thinking about taking my life. I'm like what it would be like to take my life. And we just focus on that and our thoughts stay there. And really underneath it, you're saying that there's probably something that's maybe a little bit more bite-sized, a little more manageable. Like, hey, I feel overwhelmed today, or I'm feeling lonely today. Is what I'm hearing you say. Just kind of like break it down into smaller pieces that you can say, oh, hey, I can do something maybe about loneliness. I can do something about feeling overwhelmed. There's only one or two things that I can do about suicide. It's either do it or don't. And that's pretty devastating consequences. Whereas loneliness and feeling overwhelmed, you have more choices that aren't quite as devastating.
Absolutely. And something else people don't understand is like that kind of depressed state of mind, there's something addictive about it. There's something that feels, even though it's painful, there's something that almost like feels like a magnet that like pulls me to it sometimes.
Yeah.
And so fighting back against that takes so much energy and so many tools. And for me, you know, it took a lot of trial and error. Exercise has been a huge part of my journey. I have to exercise 4 or 5 times a week to get those endorphins. Right? Building that team, like we talked about. Nutrition has been a big part of my mental health journey. When I eat better, I feel better. Yeah. Medication has been parts of my journey. Therapy, having places to talk about that stuff. And another way that I really, probably the biggest thing that has helped me besides exercise is creating what I do now, creating Recklessly Alive, this organization I have where we focus on suicide prevention. Every single day it gives me 10 minutes or 15 minutes to focus on things that I've learned, to connect with people who felt that way. So I think sometimes if anyone listening is feeling worthless or hopeless, maybe there's something you can do to start or join. You don't have to start it yourself, but if, you know, find a way to give back to other people who are struggling, because that also really helps take the focus off. This is how miserable I am. This is how crappy my life is. And gives me more of a purpose to my life than just myself.
Yeah, I love that. Because we think about, I'm hearing a theme in what we're talking about. It says like connection helps to cure some of these feelings, or at least make them manageable. And connecting with others. And so my mind goes, if I was in this position, what would I do? Like, how do I find connection? Like, do I go to a club? Do I like call a friend? There's so many options for what we think connection is. And I think what you just said is really powerful. Finding connection through serving other people or bettering their lives. Because I feel like there's better qualities of connection. There's like deeper connection and there's more like superficial connection. And I think the deeper and the closer the connection with others, the more healing it's going to be. And I can't think of something that's more healing than, you know, serving somebody, making their life better and sharing that joy that comes from, you know, serving each other.
100%. And the hardest part is when you're really in that low place, you don't feel like doing anything. I mean, feels like just to get up and make a meal or put dishes away can feel like you're about to run a marathon. Like the mental strength it takes to fight back is so challenging when you don't feel like you want to be around everyone.
Yeah.
For me, another one of my biggest tips is to just pick one thing every day. I'm going to practice. I mean, I think the psychology term for it is opposite to emotion. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do something opposite to the way that I feel. And whether it helps or not, you know, going to the gym, I might not feel better, but I tried something, right? Yeah. And then that kind of helps to build this momentum of getting out of that place. You know, like, I'm just going to go to this open gym volleyball team. I might not make a connection with anyone. I don't feel like going. I'm going to go be around people for 1 hour, and maybe I'm going to meet someone and maybe not. Yeah. But it's just forcing ourselves to do one thing every day that we don't feel like doing. And then that kind of, for me, at least when I'm really struggling, snowballs and helps get out of that place and find those connections, because it doesn't happen in a day and you're never going to feel like it. That's right. The hardest part. Right. So you're never going to feel like it, but you have to push yourself a little bit. There's this balance between grace and being kind to yourself and giving yourself space to heal and sleep and those things that you need, but also you got to take a little action to move through it.
Yeah. And I think even that process itself, from a neurological standpoint, is such a good thing for us as we do that which is opposite to what our brain is telling us. First of all, oftentimes those activities are going to help us chemically, you know, going to the gym or getting out of bed or doing something, you know, the chemicals, the serotonin, the dopamine, you know, the endorphins are going to come. But also, this reminds me, I was reading A Liberated Mind by Steve Hayes. He's the founder of ACT therapy, or acceptance and commitment therapy. And he talked about a study that they did where they had people walk around a room while saying the phrase, "I cannot walk around this room." And it's really funny and it kind of sounds silly, and they felt silly doing it, but they like really ingrained mentally, "I can't walk around this room." And the study was to then see if these same people could then endure something that they said that they can't do in the past a little bit better. And so he had one control group where they put their hand on a hot plate, and it was not hot enough it would burn you, but it was just like hot enough is uncomfortable, and they would time how long they could keep their hand there. And the control group could keep their hand on the hot plate a significantly less amount of time than those who had simply walked around the room saying, "I cannot walk around this room," because they built this neurological pattern that says, hold on, I can do things that my brain says that I can't. Like, my brain is not the ultimate law and judge. It's not the final say. I have a little bit more power here than I've given myself credit for.
100%. I mean, one of the phrases I talk about in my book that really saved me is, your brain can lie to you. Like, yeah. Right. That is an important thing to know. You don't have to believe everything you think, and your brain can get sick. It can get sick. It cannot see the world as it really is. And once you can kind of step back from that, you can start to separate some of those struggles like you talked about. And I 100% agree. It's like sometimes in life you have to just kind of go after the things that your brain says you can't do. Yeah. That has been a huge part of my recovery, is just being afraid and going for it. And I mean, that's true of everyone, not just mental health. I mean, a lot of things are not just people who have mental illness, but a lot of things we're talking about today apply to everyone. You know, you don't have to wait until you have suicidal thoughts or you're like at rock bottom to start some of this journey, to start your taking care of your health, to start therapy. I mean, for me, the best time to start therapy is not when you're in the lowest. It's when you're just kind of fucking, you know, you're like, my life could be better. I could feel more whole. I could feel more healed. Mm. And I just think that it's such an important part of the healing journey, is kind of all of that together to create this place where we want to be alive and we're happy with our lives and we're just making it through.
Yeah. I love that. I love how you're mentioning, you know, you don't have to be at this like ultimatum moment where life is going to end in order to start doing this. It's actually a way better process to start before you get there, even, you know, starting to recognize those feelings in more bite-sized pieces, doing that which is opposite to the emotion or the feeling that you have. I mean, I'm definitely not in that place right now, but I mean, I experience that in the morning sometimes where I'm like, I don't want to get out of bed. I'm just loving it right here. And I keep my house like really cool because it feels nice to sleep, and I don't want to get out because my room is so freezing cold. But yeah, by just doing that, there's some sort of sense of satisfaction, and it teaches your being this new experience that says, I don't have to listen to my brain all the time. Because you're right, it sometimes can lie to us. A lot of times can lie to us.
And when we talk about building that team, you know, maybe it's, and this is one of my other recommendations, is mm-hmm. I think everyone can benefit from therapy, mm-hmm. and just starting that relationship. Maybe it's just a few months and you get into it and you're like, you know, I don't need this right now. But guess what? Now you've got a person. So when an event in your life happens and that's tough, we're all going to go through tough things. You have a person who already knows parts of your story, who can already jump right in with you and just be there and support you. Same with our friends, same with everything else. But I just think the world of therapy, I've had my own struggles with it, but I think it can be just life-changing for so many.
Right. Right. And even to that note, you know, as a practicing therapist, I think someone might oppose this conversation with like, oh, but therapists aren't real connection. Like they get paid to do what they do. But I tell you what, I would say in rare cases, is it that way? Most therapists go into this work because just they love people and they've gone through their own healing process. There was a time when I've had suicidal thoughts, not to the point of like making real plans, but I think, you know, I have that empathy and that I've had some of that struggle that when people bring that into my office, man, it's the fact that it's a job kind of goes out the window because that's a real person in front of me at that point. And so, yeah, I think having just, you know, a backup, a person, a therapist that they can really understand you is definitely a good place to start.
And having someone who has been trained, who can give you those tools, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully we all have some good friends or we're in progress of having good friends. It's also like, they're not necessarily trained on how to help you move through that trauma. They're going to be there for you. They're going to be that part that's listened, but to have someone who is on the outside, who really can kind of call you out a little bit when you need it, and can give you those tools. I mean, my therapy journey, I did about a full year a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And in the moment it was so hard because I'm quite sick of talking about my trauma in therapy. Like I'm just kind of done. Right. And in the moment, I kind of got done and I was like, wow, that was really expensive. Did that help? I'm not sure. Sometimes I feel worse, but it's been like rubbing a bruise where like it hurts more, but it kind of just helps everything else feel okay. And the number of times I've then had tools to give away to other people, like you don't even really sometimes recognize, you know, the way a therapist is helping to change the way you think and to help you on your healing journey. So I'm really thankful for the therapists that I've had. I'm thankful for the work that you do.
Well, you're making me feel excited about my own job right now. This is awesome. I'm excited about my appointments that I have today now because of you. I appreciate that. Well, Sam, we're coming up pretty close on our time, but I want to ask you one question, and that is like, if you had one message for the world, and I know you have a lot of messages for the world, and I invite you guys to follow Sam's Instagram and also read his book. Remind me of your handle. I know it. What's your Instagram?
Recklessly Alive.
Okay, that's right.
We're recklesslyalive.com. The book is called Recklessly Alive. And that has become, you know, my message has been, have you really given life everything you've got? And that's, it's what drives me in your healing journey and everything that you're doing. I think it's so easy to just get stuck in existing and trying to get through. And I think where a lot of our suicide prevention falls short is we kind of just post the suicide prevention number and we say, don't kill yourself. And I fully believe in my core that that is not enough. You have to not just decide I'm going to stay, but go after the things you really want in life, to chase those adventures. I mean, following my suicide attempt, I truly believed there would never be another good day worth living. And I was so wrong. I mean, the things that I have had the opportunity to be a part of, 18 months after my attempt, I spent 6 weeks in Africa traveling with a worship band, going on safaris, meeting the most incredible people, eating food I'd never imagined.
And I love this.
I stood in front of Victoria Falls, which is one of the 7 natural wonders of the world. As far left and right as you can see is a waterfall. And I just sobbed because that moment really hit me that, yes, we all are going to struggle and we're going to have times that maybe we don't even want to be alive. But I promise every single person listening to this, there will be days worth living where you'll say, I can't believe I almost missed this. I can't believe I almost missed having a family or missed this wedding or missed this trip or missed just all these incredible moments that we can have in our lives. But it takes first deciding to stay, deciding that, you know, we're going to take suicide off the table. Even if I have that thought, I'm never going to act on it. I'm going to get help. And then second, healing, creating that team that we talked about so you can heal and move yourself out of it. And then giving life everything you've got, just going for it, going after those adventures, being brave enough to say, you know what, I am going to go to Africa for 6 weeks and I'm terrified, but I'm going to live a life that I'm proud of and that I love. And that I am going to be true to who I want to be and live the life that recklessly alive, you know, just going for it.
Wow. I love that. I think what you just said is so powerful, saying that one day you're going to be able to stand there and you're going to be looking at a situation, maybe looking at a waterfall in Africa or looking at a new baby or whatever it might be. And in that moment, you're going to realize, gosh, I'm so grateful that I stayed. Like, I would have missed out on this. And I really take that as a promise. I think if anybody is thinking about leaving or ending their life, that one day you'll be able to come to that moment where you say, goodness, I'm really glad I didn't miss out on this. And Sam, I appreciate the time that you've taken to talk with me today. If you guys haven't followed Sam on Instagram or TikTok, please do so. Recklessly Alive is his Instagram handle, and you can find his information there. He also wrote a book about his story and giving some helpful tips and information about dealing with suicidal thoughts and what that journey looks like. This has been an incredible experience. Thank you.
My pleasure. Me as well.
If you found today's episode helpful and you would like more resources for healing and especially healing within your relationships, I've got a whole bunch of good stuff for you. If you go to the link in the description of this video, my link tree, you'll find a bunch of other links there that lead you to a variety of resources, a free worksheet for couples, a connected couples course to help you build more secure communication and awareness in your relationship. Also, you can reach out to me there to learn about my therapy services. I can practice in certain areas, not all areas. And so feel free to reach out and I'll let you know whether or not we can meet. But thank you so much for joining me for another episode of The Art of Healing.